barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20. 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.
It is Wednesday, August 31st, the last day of August. Tomorrow is Thursday, September 1st, and we have week one of college football kicking off. We're going to break down both of those games. We're going to talk Penn State, Purdue. We're going to talk West Virginia, Pitt in the backyard brawl. Two former USC quarterbacks dueling it out in the backyard brawl. We're going to talk about all of this. Now, if you noticed, to my right, or my left, I guess, on screen, we are missing my co-host, Chris Drew, because Chris got a haircut yesterday. So if you didn't see it, our general tier on Patreon, which the link is right at the bottom there, and it is always below Chris, our general tier and higher, you got to check out the general tier. It's unbelievable. One, they got to watch the whole thing live streamed on YouTube, and we're going to put out a YouTube episode coming soon to watch Chris's transformation from the beautiful and lovely Alex Armley. Hair by Alex. The link is in the bio. If you're in or around Dublin, go ahead and check her out. Not check her out. Check out her hair page and get your hair cut because she did an unbelievable job. And I'm going to show you what his hair looks like in a second. But there is a PSA, a warning. If any of you degenerates do some degenerate shit with her, she will tell me and we will put you on blast on the show. So keep it classy. She's a classy woman. She's really good at her job. I just wanted to show you the visual that Chris walked into when he went to get his hair cut. So without further ado, he's made for radio. Hair is gone. He is ready for YouTube. Chris Drew, look at him. How you doing, Chris?
First day of school in this bitch. Feel like a new man.
I know you feel fresh.
I feel good. No, she did a really good job, bro. She lined it up on the sides. Obviously, right. I got the receding hairline, but the side fade looks good. We're feeling good today. My head's colder than a motherfucker because it took you guys so long to get to 10K.
Hey, all I know is Menace Army had your back. Not only did they donate $1,000 to shave your eyebrow, they got to 10K in like a couple months just to get your hair cut. And now here we are. We're going to have fresh Chris from now on. The fresh Chris of Akron.
You see a little like Russell Wilson. Right. Let's ride.
So drop in the comments who you think Chris looks like. Give me a Chris Drew lookalike now that he's cleaned up.
I'm feeling good.
Oh, Chris, we got a lot to talk about. So we're going to break down Penn State, Purdue here in about middle of the show. We're going to talk about West Virginia Pitt, less analytical at the end of the show. But first, it's not a sports media personality. It's more a sports personality. But we have a dumbass sports personality that we have to address, Chris. Mm-hmm. Malik Zaire, quarterback from Alter High School in Dayton, didn't get an Ohio State offer. Went to Notre Dame, was below average, had to transfer to Florida State, barely played there, and now he's butthurt, singing the praises of Notre Dame and how Ohio State is dog shit. His tweet read, Chris, all this chatter for a top-ranked Ohio State team that won't play on major TV after ND because their schedule is full of bottom dwellers. But wait, he doubled down. That was yesterday. He doubled down today. The Big Ten right now is garbage. The only team that looks forward to competing for a national championship is Ohio State. Every other team plans their season in hopes of beating Ohio State for the Big Ten championship. Case in point, why Ohio State is uninteresting to watch week to week, Chris. So before we absolutely go in on him, I'm curious in the comments. What place would Notre Dame finish in? If you ranked all the Big Ten teams, where would they rank consistently on average year in, year out? Do you think they'd be second behind Ohio State? Would they be behind Michigan, behind Wisconsin? I'm curious. What? Just throw the number. 3, 4, 2 in the comments. Tell me where you think they would rate, Chris. So, Chris, your initial reaction before I just absolutely obliterate him.
I mean, honestly, like last year we saw Notre Dame get pushed around by Cincinnati. You think they would do all right in the Big Ten? Like,
no.
how are they going to say, like, Like, for him to be that stupid, like, his team is pulling out the freshest uniforms they've had ever, those weak-ass uniforms. I think they're doing something to come play us. And to say we play bottom dwellers? It's like they have maybe two good games on their schedule outside of that.
I mean, like, they're really touting at BYU in Vegas to be a massive game. BYU.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, if Ohio State played BYU, they would be 20-point favorites. I'm with you. USC is going to be a massive storyline and probably a really good game because of Caleb Williams, the transfers, Lincoln Riley. And then, obviously, his first game against Ohio State is a big game. But listen, it's a big game because it's Ohio State, not because it's Notre Dame. And this notion, I mean, you put it back up there, that major TV, ND plays on major TV more than Ohio State. I will bring up the average viewership on major TV nationally, last college football season, average viewers per game. Ohio State is number one in America, 5.2 million views average per game. Notre Dame is ninth. So just because you have an exclusive deal with NBC does not mean you are more popular to watch on TV or you get more notoriety than Ohio State. I mean, look at that. Michigan State is in front of them. Michigan State is ahead of Notre Dame. Further Penn to that State. Point, Chris, let's talk about equivalent bowl games. Oklahoma State plays Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl, right? Ohio State plays Utah in the Rose Bowl. Ohio State hit an 8.2 rating. Notre Dame hit a 4.2 rating. Almost half as many people watched Notre Dame as watched Ohio State in the bowl game. And then you want to look at the season. How about this? Week 8, OSU played Indiana on CBS.
Indiana.
Notre Dame played USC on ABC. Which is a bigger game? ND-USC rivalry or Ohio State versus the worst team in the Big Ten?
ND-USC should absolutely be the bigger game.
Guess which one had better ratings, Chris?
Ohio State, Indiana had better ratings than Notre Dame, USC.
Ohio State had better ratings than Notre Dame, USC. Notre Dame, USC posted a 2.2. Ohio State, I don't have it written down, I think it was a 3.4. Ohio State, Indiana was more watched than ND, USC. So let's just keep slapping that Malik Zaire ass around. Notre Dame eclipsed 3.0 rating on a single game three times last year. Ohio State did it seven. More than twice as many times they eclipsed 3.0, right? Their highest rating was a 4.2. Ohio State almost doubled that twice. They got 8.2 in the Rose Bowl, 8.1 against Michigan in the rivalry game. This is not even a conversation.
It's not even close.
This is a kid that is obviously just still pissed off that he was a below average quarterback from the state of Ohio. Mm-hmm. Ohio State didn't offer him. He went to Notre Dame. His career didn't pan out. And now he's popping off about Ohio State. It's like that hot girl that wouldn't let you hit, right? You just, I get it. Ohio State's ugly an attractive place and they didn't want you.
It's like you slid in her DMs and she was ugly anyway.
Ugly anyway. And it's just, it's amazing. It truly is amazing. So that is our nominee for Dumbass Sports Personality of the Week. But we have, I wouldn't say this is dumbass, but this is a double down by ESPN, a video that we're going to watch. Reese Davis put a statement out about Lee Corso, and we're going to just discuss it because I think we pretty accurately hit that situation yesterday. But here's what Reese had to say about Lee Corso and his mental capacity and his mental well-being.
I would encourage the people who were perhaps, to use your word, unkind or cruel, to reserve a little judgment. He's doing great. I speak to him regularly. And this weekend in Columbus, I think you'll see a much more comfortable environment and you'll see him be able to deliver as he still does, which is remarkable because his mind is still razor sharp at the age of 87. I should be so fortunate, you know, if I'm blessed to make it that far in my life.
He is mentally razor sharp. We're going to act like this was Lee Corso was out of his element because he was by himself on a stage. Like, and we're going to act like we didn't watch ESPN all year last year. And I very, very publicly have said I don't watch ESPN. I don't. I never turn game day on. I just get clips sent to me and I see what's on social media. That's how I see it. Mm-hmm. And there's instance after instance. I promise you, when game day's in Columbus, he will not seem mentally razor sharp.
Yeah, and this is quite clearly an ESPN like kind of tour to try to shift the narrative because nobody was mean to Lee Corso.
Nobody.
What was being said is ESPN, what the hell are you doing trotting him out there? He's obviously like past it. Just stop putting him on television and stop embarrassing him. He changed the conversation entirely. That was Reese Davis, who is generally a good guy, on another ESPN show. And then after that, you know what they said on that show? Dan Le Batard, they're talking that game day is the greatest thing, the greatest college football pregame show, and it's absolutely perfect, and leave Lee on there. So this is like ESPN doubling down, and it's bullshit. Like it's gonna ruin and mess up how Lee Corso should be remembered on television.
It is, and it's not only that. It's it's completely out of touch that mm-hmm. they're, and it's intentional. They're trying to shift the attention that they're getting for parading him out there and shift it to hate towards Lee Corso. This is what's wrong with society, right? No one's mad at Lee Corso. There's no hate towards Lee Corso. No one's saying negative things about Lee Corso. They're saying negative things about your company. Right. And so they're really protecting their company and trying to shift the blame onto Lee Corso by doing so. And it's disgusting, mm-hmm. but it's on brand.
And it's because, like, everybody loves Lee Corso. That's why we hate seeing him trotted out there like this for the benefit of ESPN. Like, that's what they're doing. They're literally squeezing him dry, getting as many ratings as they possibly can, and then they'll let him go. So for Reese to do this and this whole media apology tour is absolutely stupid. Which, I mean,
well, it's embarrassing. Shame on you, ESPN.
Shame on ESPN. Shame on ESPN, man.
All right, but I want to shift, Chris. Let's talk about the big game on Thursday, Penn State Purdue. We're going to start and lead with that because I have a question for the chat. Serious question, because I think this is upset potential. Penn State Purdue at Purdue. Who starts the year 1-0? Does James Franklin start the year of 2022 1-0? Or does Jeff Brohm pull off the marginal upset? +3.5 is the spread. Does Purdue pull off the upset at home against Penn State this Thursday, tomorrow? So I need to know in the chat, who starts 1-0, PSU or Purdue? Drop it in the chat. Chris, thoughts on the game?
I'm really interested in Penn State. I'm really interested in, like, what version of James Franklin and Penn State teams we're going to get. Because he's another one of the coaches that we both agree kind of has underperformed and kind of underdelivered since he's gotten to Penn State. I mean, his time at Vandy was kind of stapled as being a really good recruiter and being able to overachieve down there. And things changed when he got to Penn State. So for James Franklin, like, he has to start 1-0, because I told you before the season started that I'm kind of tracking him and Scott Frost, because if one guy's seat gets colder, the other one's going to get warmer, because I think those are two programs that both expect more from their coaches, and they're both coaches have underachieved. On the other side, Aiden O'Connell, the Big Ten's best quarterback.
Best quarterback. But so here's the thing about how this season's going to play out, right? Mm-hmm. If James Franklin loses this game, he and Scott Frost lost games that they shouldn't have lost. They're 0-1, and someone's going to look at getting fired. Like, they're going to probably get fired. Exactly. And the minute one pulls the trigger, the other's pulling the trigger too, because then you're in a race to hire the coach, right? The best coach you can. And Nebraska, Penn State are about as attractive jobs. Penn State maybe slightly more, but I can make an argument for either side.
Yeah, but Nebraska right now is ahead in the NIL foundation stuff. Absolutely. They have a better NIL stuff in place, but Penn State, I think right now, is the better facilities currently. Correct me if I'm wrong. So
yeah, it's just historically a better program. I think Nebraska, because there's this case to be made that Nebraska is a better job, but if he loses this job, they're not going to fire him after the first game. But at some point, if he has mediocre success, both Nebraska and Penn State will just be looking at the other one like, are you going to do it first? Mm-hmm. And then one of them's going to pull the trigger and start a coaching search, and the other one's going to panic fire and do the same. That's what's going to happen. Because you look at 2021, Penn State started off 5-0. They had a big win against Wisconsin, big win against Auburn. Then they go to Iowa. They're up 17-3. Iowa knocks out Sean Clifford, and they end up losing by 3. Really, Kinnick Stadium won that game. I mean, they had multiple penalties. They were pinned deep in their own territory. It was a field position battle. They lost by 3. Then they proceeded to go 2-6 in their last 8 games. They lost to Illinois by 2. They only lost to Ohio State by 9. They lost to Michigan, the Big Ten champions and college football playoff, team by 4. They lost by 3 to Michigan State. So they lost close games down the stretch and finished 2-6. It was an abysmal finish to the year.
No, I agree. And there's just so much pressure, I think, on James Franklin. Because additionally, like, that kid down at Kentucky that's playing quarterback, like, you want Sean Clifford has to be better than him. Like, that's just simply it.
Yeah, he has to do something. Will Levis left Penn State and went to Kentucky, right? Mm-hmm. It was like a Justin Fields, Jake Fromm situation. Exactly. And we'll talk about another situation similar to that in Stetson Bennett and JT Daniels coming up at the end of the show. But when I look at this Penn State team, right, I'll look at this entire game. We'll break it down side by side. Mm-hmm. I look at this Penn State offense, and the moral of the story is Mike Yurcich is not a good coordinator. He wasn't good at Ohio State. Ryan Day had to basically do his job for him. He went to Penn State, and they were abysmal on offense. They were in the 30th percentile production offensively. I think they have a really talented stable. The guy Jawan Sider is the running backs coach. He's a young coach that you should keep an eye on. He will be a head coach at some point. Really good recruiter. And they have a solid backfield. They have the number one back in the country, Nick Singleton, coming in. They have Kevon Lee returning. And their run game was lackluster and didn't perform well because of one reason. They had the worst O-line in the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. And to double down on that, Chris, they lost their only two All-Big Ten O-linemen after last year. So they're gone. Jeez. Rasheed Walker's gone. Mike Miranda's gone. Penn State, they added two players from the portal, a kid from Cornell and a JUCO grad. So it's not like they did what Michigan did and a grad, you know, integrated the best center in college football returning from Virginia. They brought in two unknown guys. And so this O-line is terrifying to think about.
No, I agree. Who do you think has the advantage of the quarterback room, though? Well, like, just while we're talking about the offense of Penn State, do you think that they have an advantage at quarterback or could have an advantage at quarterback? Or is it quite frankly, like, widened by the fact that Aiden O'Connell's him? Because I think Sean Clifford has better weapons.
Aiden O'Connell's he's in the conversation for top four quarterbacks in the Big Ten, right? You're going to have probably J.J. McCarthy at Michigan, C.J. Stroud at Ohio State, Tua Tagovailoa at Maryland. I mean, so he'll be right in that tier of pushing to be maybe a top four, top five quarterback. Sean Clifford has given us – this is his fourth year starting. He's given us no indication that he's not going to be seventh at best, right?
But does Aiden take a step back without the weapons?
Well, that definitely could happen, right? And we'll talk about Purdue's offense in a minute. Yeah, here's the key player that I'm looking at, right? Because if Sean Clifford can get over his turnover bugs, if he can play, maybe have a Kenny Pickett type of leap, right? Not that great, but just he improves a lot in his curtain call year. Jahan Dotson is no longer there. And James Franklin was open in press conferences about he was trying to feed Jahan Dotson the ball as much as he could. And if they still can't run the ball, they need a guy to do that to. Enter via transfer portal, Western Kentucky's Mitchell Tinsley Sr., a 1,400-yard receiver at Western Kentucky. I'm not saying he is going to be a Jahan Dotson, but no, he is the guy everyone's looking at.
Ball player. Like, he was a
really, he's a really the guy everyone's looking player. At. Like, maybe he can be that guy, right?
No, I mean, again, it's up to Mike Yurcich. Mike Yurcich is now designing kind of he's coaching quarterbacks, and he's designing the playbook. So, I mean, he's got his fourth-year guy that there should be no excuse at this point. Add an extra weapon outside. Like, no. I know we talked about him not being a great coordinator, but schematically, is he going to put Sean Clifford in the best position to win?
I don't know how much
you trust him, because like at Oklahoma State, I thought he did a really good job. At Ohio State, there were some issues with him recruiting. He didn't prioritize C.J. Stroud. And if it were up to Mike Yurcich, we would have only had Jack Miller in that class.
There's no doubt. I think he is Tim Beck 2.0. I really do. And Tim Beck is at NC State doing really well. So that's not to say he can't do really well. Maybe in the offseason he develops his offense. He studies professional development. He becomes a better quarterback developer. Like it's a learning curve growth process. And he might be a better coach this year than he was a year ago. But he also might be the same guy. And history would tell me that he's going to be the same guy. So I don't have a lot of faith in this Penn State offense at all. And then you flip over to the defensive side of the ball. They had Brent Pry forever. And they were always salty on defense. He's gone. He's at Virginia Tech. Now they bring in Manny Diaz. Manny Diaz is a respected defensive mind, was the head coach at Miami. And they really were just average on defense last year. Their 2021 defense was average. The only thing they did well is they didn't let people score. They only allowed over 24 points twice to Ohio State and Michigan State. So you can't tell me if they hold a team under 24 points, they can't put an average offense in the field that can throw over, that can score over 24 points. They'll be an eight plus win team if they can just do that offensively. So I think their defensive woes last year and their lack of success overall, it really falls on the offensive side of the ball.
Who do you think is the more talented team, like start to finish?
Well, you would say, you think Penn State based on recruiting rankings, but you know, that's not always what you base it on. I mean, Aiden O'Connell was an eighth string walk-on. Sean Clifford was a decently large recruit, right? That's the difference here. But Aiden O'Connell is playing better. So Penn State's a more talented team, but Jeff Brohm and his staff are maximizing their guys and getting more out of them than James Franklin. And that's not new. James Franklin has always under-delivered on the field when he had some recruiting success. I think they had the sixth class in the country last year. We'll see where that class ends up. Will they have the sixth most draft picks in 3-4 years? I doubt that.
If you look at the advanced metrics, Purdue had the 25th best offense in the country last year on way less talent, and Penn State was all the way at 76th.
Right.
Like that is a prime example of like not maximizing talent.
And the thing about Purdue's offense, when you look at it, right, is it was a one-trick pony. They threw more passes than all but Mike Leach and Mississippi State last year. They threw the ball. I mean, they were awful in the run game. 127th in yards per game, 130th in yards per carry. That's fucking last, basically. They just threw it around the field. They had the fifth most passing yards in the NCAA, but they threw it more than everyone in the country except Mike Leach. Think about that.
They threw it more than Tennessee?
They threw it more than anyone except for Mississippi State.
No balance.
And, balance and Mississippi State's going to take that. It's like Navy or Army's going to lead the country in rushing. All Leach does is throw the ball. So that's always going to be the case. So if you finish second, you really threw it more than any other normal football team.
Right, exactly. Mike Leach's team, it's so funny, man, because Will Rogers threw for 4,400 yards last year and like 40 touchdowns. Nobody cares because it's like it's Mike Leach's offense. Like if he has made that in the SEC.
Yeah, there's no doubt. So you back to the quarterback battle you talked about. I mean, if you look at the analytics and study the film, Aiden O'Connell was a top five quarterback coming back in Power Five football this year. He averaged it on the season. His season grade was 91%. So he was a top five quarterback on the field last year. Sean Clifford was 36th. And on top of that, the only issue that they're going to have at Purdue is David Bell is gone, as well as their next two receiving threats, right? Their top three receivers are all out the door. Yep, Purdue just watched over 2,500 yards receiving walk out the door. So there's a glaring hole at receiver right now.
No, I agree. I mean, that's what did Aiden O'Connell throw for last year? 3,800 yards, and they just watched 2,500 of that walk out
ridiculous
the door.
Year. Now, the only saving grace, and honestly, what I'm looking at for this game is they didn't have any of those three receivers in their Music City Bowl win over Tennessee, right? Mm-hmm. And they still had Brock Thompson, kind of that guy that they're hoping is the next David Bell, went off for 217 yards, two touchdowns. He averaged over 31 yards a catch against Tennessee, which is, you know, they were below average defensively, but they're still an SEC defense, right? I really, really think Purdue has a chance to pull this upset off.
How good is their offensive line?
Their offensive line is, I would say, on par with Penn State's offensive line. I don't know that they're, you know, that's a contention point in this game that they have a much better offensive line than Penn State will have. But I think they're about equal. I think that's kind of a wash. And then you look at their defensive side of the ball. I think that's where you kind of really get nervous for this Penn State team because they had All-American George Karlaftis. They had their leading tackler, Jalen Alexander. Both of them are gone. Other than those two, though, they returned 72% of their defensive production. So they lost their two superstars, but basically the rest of the people that contributed and actually made plays are coming back.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. I was just wondering how you expect the Purdue offensive line to stack up against the Penn State defensive line. I do know that the Aiden O'Connell did well under pressure. He was, you know, graded out 77.1 by PFF on all plays under pressure, which say what you will about PFF, they do a good job breaking that kind of thing down.
They do. Here's the thing about Aiden O'Connell. If you're an Ohio State fan, you watched it live and in person when he diced up Ohio State's defense. This motherfucker gets the ball out faster than anyone else in the Big Ten. He gets the ball out in 2.0, 2.1 seconds. So he eliminates a lot of pass rush because he's so efficient, gets through reads, knows where to go with the ball. He's a smart player, and it gets out of his hands. That is how Purdue equalized their offensive line being average or below average. And he's going to do it again this year. He's only going to know the offense better, be a smarter player than he was a year ago. So that is how they equalize a great pass rush.
Who do you think wins that game?
Purdue.
Do you have a score prediction?
Here's the thing, right? Last year, Purdue was abysmal on defense 2 years ago. Last year, they weren't great on defense. But the one thing they did, they hired three co-coordinators. Now Ron English is kind of calling the shots. And they made a big emphasis. They were trying to disrupt the football. They were trying to create turnovers. That's what they wanted. They felt like they had this quarterback that could wheel and deal and get the ball out and score points, which ended up being true. And they just were trying to get him the ball more. They finished third in the Big Ten in interceptions. That combined with Sean Clifford's obsession of throwing the fucking ball to the wrong team, I really think that's going to be the difference. Sean Clifford turns the ball over like he traditionally has. I think Aiden O'Connell pulls this win out at home, 3.5-point underdogs, and that is what it is. Here's a did you know point, Chris, for this game, though, as you watch. Did you know that Penn State outscored their opponent 80-33 in the first quarter? So that means they have a decent game plan going in, right? They get off to a hot start, and their in-game adjustments are dog shit. They get out-coached during the game.
Zach, do you remember 2019 Ohio State, how good we were on the script?
Oh, yeah.
How good we were against Clemson on the script?
Oh, yeah.
Mike Yurcich is phenomenal on the script.
That's what it is.
When those bullets start flying afterwards.
But there's a reason why, right? That screams incompetence for the coordinator, because that script is not developed and those decisions are not made by one man, right? Those decisions, that first quarter is planned out by a staff. And then in game, you have Mike Yurcich up in the box with an, oh, I don't know who is in the box with him, but you have only have a couple guys with eyes on the field that can make those tweaks and adjustments to what they see live. You don't have your full strength staff that can see everything and make those adjustments. So that's where it really has a red flag to me that this man, Mike Yurcich, they have a decent staff, but they aren't getting the in-game adjustments done to keep that success going for four quarters.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but I trust Sean Clifford, Manny Diaz, and Mike Yurcich. I'm going Penn State for that week one for tomorrow's game.
Well, my best value bet was, so I'm doing my gambling research, and I'll put out my official picks for Thursday tomorrow, and then my college football weekend picks Friday night or Saturday morning. I don't know yet. But either way, the value here is in the Purdue money line. It's at plus 140. You do have slightly below a 50% chance based on all my analytics that it hits, but the value at plus 140 is there. Right. Mm-hmm. And so how I'm going to bet this weekend, I'm doing a parlay, which I'll show you later. I'm going to bet Purdue money line and I'm going to bet West Virginia money line, because if I play my math right, I can have a winning day if one of those games hits. And if they both hit, it's going to be a massive fucking day on Thursday.
How much does it hit for? You had the numbers out before.
I'll put it up in a second. Here's the other gambling analytic for this. 63% of all current betting tickets have Purdue money line. So okay, of the so money line bets, 63% of people are betting Purdue to win the game straight up because of the value. Mm-hmm. And if you want to protect yourself for like a close loss, you can take Purdue at +3.5. You have a 3.3% edge, which is a pretty decent edge in gambling. So you have over a 50% chance that hits. So my money's all the way on Purdue. I'm taking the money line for the value. But if you want to be a little safer, go +3.5.
Mm-hmm. Heard.
Now we got a backyard brawl to talk about, Chris. Zach. Backyard brawl. And I'll throw my bookie parlay on the screen for you, right? This is my bookie is our partner. Go to mybookie.ag, use promo code Menace. You get a free deposit match up to $500. They give you free money to gamble with. That's the moral of the story. They have great prop bets that you can parlay all these. Here's my parlay from my bookie. I'm taking Purdue money line, West Virginia money line, two-leg parlay. I did this last year with NC State and Texas A&M when they beat Alabama, and it paid off big. This one pays off bigger. Not as likely, obviously, but the value is incredible. $100 parlay. You see mine there. It wins $752 if you lock it in right now. So go sign up at MyBookie, use our promo code, and lock in that parlay, because I think it's got a decent shot.
Oh, man, this next game I really didn't have that much interest in until pretty recently, Zach, and I'm like all the way in. I cannot wait for West Virginia Pitt today or tomorrow.
It's going to be awesome. And just I'll get the gambling out of the way. The best bet is West Virginia +7.5. That's an incredible number of points for an unknown Pitt team, which we'll talk about in a second. Mm-hmm. But 71% of all money is on West Virginia to cover. That's an incredibly high amount of the money.
That's huge.
71% is on West Virginia +7.5. So I would lock that one in at the very least, because I think that has great value and a great chance to hit.
Zach, I'm ready for you to die on a hill with me. I got this clip, man. I'm about to play it. Because he is him. That's JT Daniels, starting quarterback at West Virginia.
Play it one more time. Play it one more time. We realize that was a 60-yard throw. He threw that ball from like the, what I don't know, what I just counted the lines right there. He just threw that ball 60 yards on an absolute fucking dime, outside shoulder on a go route. And this is just this storyline. If this kid balls out at West Virginia and Georgia happens to have a down tick from their national championship, the storyline is all going to be about the fact that Kirby fucked it up again. And I said he did for 2 years now. JT Daniels should have been the starting quarterback at Georgia, just like Justin Fields should have been the starting quarterback over Jake Fromm. He's in love with these below average white guys. Jake Fromm, Stetson Bennett. Fuck, Chris, I got a shot to be the starting quarterback at Georgia next year. It's just absurd. JT Daniels, I think, has a coming out party. And I agree with you. I think West Virginia pulls off the upset in the backyard brawl.
Yeah, I guess they said he didn't want to practice at Georgia. I don't know what happened, what the culture thing is, or what the coaching issue down there was, or whether it was Tom Monken or whatever. But Zach, the kid can play. He was a five-star kid coming out. And the other storyline in this game is that the guy who he left USC for, I believe, is now at Pitt. So it's like the battle of the USCs.
It's crazy, right? That's why he left, because Keaton Slovis took the won the job at USC, and so he transferred out. And now they're battling. So there's a lot invested here, and a lot of motivation for both quarterbacks, really. But it's crazy, because I don't understand the hype on Pitt. We know Desmond Howard's a fucking idiot. When he picked Pitt to make the playoffs, that was asinine. Some say for clickbait. I'd say his whole existence is clickbait.
It's a clickbait. He is clickbait.
He is clickbait. His takes are so dumb, they're all clickbait. And at some point, unless you want to be Stephen A. Smith or RJ Young, which I guess there's some, you know, fiscal value there, or personal interest in making money, because for some reason these guys get hired, unless he's trying to do it just to get paid to be an idiot, which it seems what he's doing. Everyone knows that's an asinine pick. Pitt lost Kenny Pickett. Enter Keaton Slovis, was an average quarterback at USC. Maybe he can have a jump like Kenny Pickett, but that again is a complete unknown. And Jordan Addison is gone. The Biletnikoff Award winner is gone.
And the guy that put those two, Mark Whipple?
And the coordinator.
Yeah. He's gone too. So I'm really confused about Pitt last year, because it's interesting, because like I know Pat Narduzzi is a defensive guy, and we've talked about it a couple times. Last year's Pitt team, Zach, I know that Narduzzi went on that podcast and kind of blamed Mark Whipple for some of their losses, but they were Swiss cheese. Like, they couldn't stop a nosebleed on defense, Zach. And now we're going to get that fixed magically in a year, and you're going to have elite NFL quarterback play, and you're going to be able to replace the production from Jordan Addison, and you're going to get somebody to call the plays. Exactly. I don't see it. For me, I'm going to say it right now before we even kind of dig into it. This one's easy for me. I'm picking West Virginia, and the +7.5 to me feels criminally high, unless Vegas knows something that I don't know. But
Vegas always knows something you don't know. But also, just remember this. If there's a time you can fuck Vegas up, if you can get after Vegas, it's always early in the year before they, because they know a lot, but they don't they don't have any analytical proof, because these teams haven't played yet. And I just think there's way too much favor being given to Pitt because of the success they had last year, and not realizing that Keaton Slovis did not play like Kenny Pickett. And you're projecting that this new coordinator, Frank Cignetti Jr., is going to elevate his play just like Mark Whipple did with Kenny Pickett, that somehow they're going to develop another Jordan Addison. It's just highly unlikely in my mind. I am all over West Virginia.
Yeah, and Graham Harrell is the coordinator over there at West Virginia, and he's been kind of regarded the last like 3 or 4 years as a riser in the quarterback development. So, I mean, I think that JT kind of messed up his development by reclassifying coming early, but I think the one guy that's Graham Harrell at West Virginia, I really like them. I like them straight up, and with the 7.5, I definitely like them, and I don't really have any faith in Pitt. And additionally, I have invested interest in this, because I want them to win so bad. Because if that's the case, I can't wait to see Desmond Howard try to talk around it on game day.
And here's the thing, right? There's a reason for this. Just don't pay attention to the man behind the curtain, right? The old Wizard of Oz saying. Mm-hmm. Why do you think Desmond Howard picked Pitt? Well, there's one reason, right? Fox has Purdue, Penn State. The Midwest, other than Michigan fans, hates Desmond Howard, and ESPN has the Pitt-West Virginia game. They're in the same time slots. They're competing. Desmond Howard might be smarter than we think. He might just be a puppet for ESPN, because I want to watch the West Virginia-Pitt game, because I want West Virginia to win, so he looks like a fucking idiot. So now they're driving their ratings up. Like, there's a method to their madness. There's a reason why these takes are being sold. Don't fall for the bullshit. Open your eyes. Take the red pill. Like, figure this shit out. He didn't just dumbassedly put it on there. He's trying to get you to watch the game. So I unfortunately am going to watch the game. It is going to work. And I mean, I was going to watch it anyways because of this show, but that is why he's doing it.
Yeah, it worked. It worked against, I mean, it worked for me. I didn't even think about that. I just think the buddy's stupid. Like,
right. I don't think. But that's my point, right?
Yeah.
You have to open your eyes, see the, what's really going on here.
Who do you think has an advantage in the quarterback room, Keaton or JT?
They both have I think JT Daniels is a better player. I do. Okay. And I've thought that. I've studied his film, and I've said it for 2 years at Georgia. He should have been the starter. I thought Keaton Slovis was just a good player. I didn't think he was an average player. I really think we're talking about two guys that are good, not great, right? Yeah. But I think I would give the edge to JT Daniels.
Okay. No, that's fair. I'm really excited for that game in particular. If you look at last year's offenses and defenses, I mean, they're kind of right around the same. I mean, they both have the 29th and 28th ranked offense. The issue is the power rank overall, 45th versus 11th, and the defense, the power rank overall defense too is like 46th versus 9th.
Yeah. So there's no doubt. I'm gonna throw this up here, Chris. It's not even a super chat, but oh, that's the wrong one. But I appreciate you hate being late to the menace. But it's this one, Zach. Us Michigan fans do claim Desmond, but we don't agree with those takes at all. I can appreciate the shit out of that, and that's why I know, you know, Michigan's a good school. If you're an alumnus, I can imagine you're smart enough to not agree with Desmond's take.
in a world full of Desmond Howards, be like Charles Woodson. Absolutely. Charles Woodson gets up there and does a really good job.
A great job.
And doesn't sell out for the sake of like six extra clicks.
And I had a Charles Woodson jersey when I was a kid. So there you go.
Don't say that out loud. Do not say that out loud. The other game, Zach, Mr. Danith Lanning.
Ooh.
Taking on Georgia. Oregon versus Georgia week one. Oregon, shout out to them for the early, strong non-conference games. Like they fucking schedule them, Zach. Like
there's
they
no doubt.
Want all the smoke.
They want all the smoke. And you know what? I'm not fully done with my breakdown on Oregon, Georgia, but yeah, I think there's value here in another, I won't call an upset, but I think Oregon has a chance because they have Bo Nix, who's been in the SEC. This is not going to be some shell shock like a normal Oregon quarterback. He has a ton of experience, and they have Dan Lanning. Dan Lanning orchestrated and constructed the defense that delivered the national championship to Georgia. He knows more about Georgia's offense than anyone in the world. So he's going to have an unbelievable plan. He's going to have, I mean, it's honestly, I can't decide if it's going to be my game of the week or if Ohio State Notre Dame is going to be the game of the week, because I think they both have incredible storylines and similar possible outcomes. But I think Oregon has a better chance to upset Georgia than Notre Dame has to upset Ohio State. I really think that's true.
Is that a 17? And I didn't look at the money line, Zach. Is that a 17.5? Georgia 17.5 favorite?
Well, I haven't looked at it yet either.
I mean, if that's the case, like they're saying in the chat, like I would absolutely hammer Oregon plus 17.5.
Absolutely.
Like since Bennett being out there, like first of all, I think Georgia's going to win, but I don't trust to have like a dynamic offense, and I think that you'll need that to cover that.
I mean, you just look at this, right? If we're getting on the gambling side of this, 17.5 point favorite, right? Dan Lanning knows this offense. So he will, no matter what, if he was not the head coach and someone else was the head coach, Georgia would score at least slightly more points on that Oregon team than the one with Dan Lanning running the defense because of his knowledge, right? So you can scale back Georgia's scoring a little bit at least, right?
Yeah.
And Georgia's defense is going to be supremely talented. I'm not naive to say they lost everyone. They're going to suck. No, they've lost everyone and they're going to be unproven. And Dan Lanning knows that defense too. It's going to be slightly different because it's not him running the show, but he knows the players. He knows the personnel. He's got a veteran SEC quarterback running the show on offense, albeit a guy that I don't like that much. I don't think he's a great player. Dan Lanning can keep this within 17 points. I'm just telling you.
And Dan Lanning was gifted probably one of the top three linebacking corps in college football. Sewell and Flo are both very, very good players. And that's a defensive guy's dream, Zach.
Absolutely it is.
And especially Chris, week one, our guy's Chris. Back. Yeah,
it is a great day. It is a great day.
Where you been at, my boy?
King Bronco is back in the chat. Our favorite Michigan fan with the super chat. I know it's not super chat time, but I will read King Bronco's super chats always for you. Nah, Diamond just threw nickels at a sidewall because was the same as them getting a nap, and we was. Don't claim him any. 42-27, cry more. ND-33, OS-31. King Bronco, our VIP Menace subscribers that pay $30 a month to be in a group chat with Sarah Blake and Chris and I. They get to see additional content, behind the scenes stuff. They have offered to pay for you to have a general membership to our platform and be in our group chat every day. That's how much they love you. So I just want to throw that up there. King Bronco in the house.
He's back with another one. Kasheen delivered it.
Kasheen delivered it. King Bronco is in the building, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh my goodness. Everybody say nice to my boy King Bronco. Anyway, on Georgia, Oregon. I'm excited because I mean the strength of this Georgia receiving core is the tight ends.
Oh yeah.
And the strength of this Oregon defensive group is the linebackers.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's perfect. Can you imagine the collisions we're going to get in the run game?
Oh, it's going to be outstanding. And I'm a big Kenny McIntosh fan, right? The starting running back at Georgia. I recruited him a little bit when he was at American Heritage. No. He was at, what's the name of that school? Either way, a private school right near the beach. And I recruited him and I loved him. I think he's a great player. He was unbelievable as that third back last year, kind of the 2A, 2B. So yeah. I think he's a good player. The problem I have is Georgia's offensive line is I mean, it's all projection if we're going to say they're very good. I mean, their grades across the board, their left tackle was a 78%, left guard 63%, center 70%, right guard 69%, right tackle 75%. So both of their guards graded out under 70% last year, right? Now, granted, one of them didn't play a lot, but I just don't have a lot of faith in this offensive line. Now, Stetson Bennett does give you some escapability, some gamesmanship to him. Mm. Brock Bowers is the best tight end in college football. I get all that. I don't even know who these fucking receivers are at this point, other than I know Kyaris Jackson because I recruited him, but he's underperformed, you know, his whole career. He's had some injuries, but I just don't see it at receiver. I know there's names. I know there's recruiting stars, but I don't see the offensive firepower. You literally have a good running back, an elite tight end, an average at best offensive line, an average at best quarterback, and complete unknowns on the perimeter. So where is this lethality that we're going to talk about that Georgia's going to repeat and go to the playoffs? I don't see it.
Yeah, one of the Georgia people I talked to kind of said that this is going to be a very on-schedule offense. They do have some burners, but they're never going to be like an elite-level offense. And the tight ends are going to cause mismatch nightmares for everybody is kind of the belief in whatever RPO scheme they want to run. And also, they're going to, rumor has it, draw more quarterback runs for Stetson Bennett, who they asked to add some more weight this season. So that's interesting. So he came in with a fresh cut, a full sleeve, and he added about 15 pounds. And they hope that that'll contribute to the arm strength as well. And, you know, at times, Stetson Bennett was able to really make some splash plays. I think he had, like, more 30-yard touchdowns than C.J. Stroud, but that's kind of a goofy stat to kind of hang your hat on. Georgia's going to be a good offense, not a great offense, and I really think Dan Lanning is a great offensive mind, a defensive mind, excuse me, if I'm being honest. I know Kirby gets a lot of credit for that, but Dan Lanning was there, and he was doing a good job, and he's going to have two really good linebackers. Well, that is-
Yeah, to be fair, right? Because this is my biggest point forever. Kirby Smart is a defensive genius, like genius, right? I mean, he was the defensive coordinator at Alabama. He learned everything that Nick Saban did and kind of developed his own identity. So there's always that, well, you got to show me something, right?
Right.
Like when Marcus Freeman left Cincinnati and went to Notre Dame, he was running Luke Fickell's defense at Cincinnati, right? He certainly had input. He certainly was a part of the reason for success. But when he went to Notre Dame, it was like, this is the show me time. Show me that it was you and not Luke Fickell. That's what this is for Dan Lanning. This is show me time. Show me that it was you and not just you were running Kirby's defense. Exactly. Because the only reason that Oregon is favored by 17.5 points is it still, even losing everyone, is a complete mismatch when Bo Nix and Oregon have the ball. I mean, we know the stars that return, Jalen Carter, Nolan Smith, the guys that are, you know, amongst the best in the country. But even the guys that are filling roles, they still played well last year, and Oregon's offensive line is pathetic. Their skill at receiver is pathetic. Their tight end group is pathetic. I like their running back, but I just don't know if they have the firepower to beat Georgia. I just think that they'll be able to keep it within 17.5.
Mm-hmm. That is absolutely fair. So to kind of wrap this up, Zach, my three winners for Thursday are Penn State, West Virginia, and UGA.
I like it. I'm going Purdue, West Virginia, UGA. But I do think that if you want to be safe, a three-leg parlay playing all underdogs with the points has a decent shot. You saw what it was with that was money line. You saw what it was right. the two big Midwest underdogs, right? Now, if you want to throw in there the underdog in Oregon, I mean that payout's going to go even higher. But it's unlikely that all three hit, but I think all three have a decent chance.
Yeah, obviously, just a really solid just in case. Also, your final note on the defense last year, for Georgia. You know who their lead defensive analyst was? Will Muschamp. So it was Will Muschamp, Dan Lanning, and Kirby Smart. So like, how much does one person really do?
Like that's three experienced defensive minds right there.
That shit's crazy. Leading, I mean, and that's why they were so well coached and generational. King Bronco, he's back. Appreciate the love and the show. Rockstar from Mars. And I'm getting that tatted on my back, bro. Stop playing with me. Yeah,
we've Chris, before King we Bronco. Get to Super Chats, I want to throw this up there because I think we have like 60 squares sold. There was 3 days left. We got our Buckeye season board. It is a squares board. If you haven't played one, it's all over our social media. You get a square. You pay $100, you get a square. If the final digit in the losing score and the final digit in the winning score match up to your square on the grid, you win. You win. It's going to play in all 12 games this year, so there's 48 chances to win. If it hits at first quarter or third quarter in any game, you win $50. If it hits halftime of one game, you get money back. Final score, you get $200. So if at the minimum, if you hit two quarter scores out of 12, right, you get your money back. If you happen to hit a final score ever, you automatically double your money. And like I mentioned before, last year we had multiple people that won multiple times. The numbers change every game. So if you get stuck with kind of shitty numbers the first game, those are not your numbers for the year. They will change every week. The board will be out on Friday afternoons. So go secure your square. It's going to sell out. If you want to play, it's really fun. And then you have that square. You have something to look forward to all year. So the details are in the bio. Venmo at Cameron Media, $100, and you're on the board. That board and the Notre Dame board will be coming out Friday, 2 days. So go check it out and sign up.
Cool. Zach, I want to hit some of these super chats, and then I want to get to a what does it mean and have you kind of break through what coaches speak mean.
Yeah, let's do it.
And they both spoke. This is from our guy Michael. Chris got to be Fleming's cousin. Thank you for the five. I love my boy Julian, man. I love Julian Fleming. Shout out to Raymond for the five. Any worry that the Buckeyes will be overzealous and trying to prove they can run the ball and possibly not take advantage of some open passing lanes?
So your point is a good point, right? Do they overcommit to it to try to prove to themselves and everyone that they can do it? The problem with that, why that will never happen, is they have Ryan Day. If something's not working in the run game, he knows his passing game, his passing packages, right? His scheme. He knows he could dice people up with the skill he has and the quarterback he has. So if it's not working, he will certainly just air that bitch out like he did several times last year to win the game. He will. You'll never have that concern with Ryan Day. But if it's working, I think he's going to try to stick to a 50-50 split, because that's what he wants to be. 50-50, yeah. Maybe 55-45 throwing the ball, not 60-40 or 65-35.
The 2020 Penn State game, Zach, they came out there and they ran the ball the entire first drive. Justin Fields didn't throw a single pass and ended up ending it with a touchdown. So it was really interesting.
Yeah, I could see him doing something like that, yeah. But if it's working. Otherwise, yeah, exactly. He's going to immediately go to his fallback plan, which is his offense just slinging that bitch.
Shout out to my guy Andrew for the five. Julian Fleming has a better hairline. Love the show, guys.
That's absolutely not true, Chris. And I'm not trying to stick up for you, but your hairline is better than Julian Fleming's.
We literally have a picture with me and Julian Fleming. Like we talked. We
right. Whatever. And your hairline looks better now that it's cleaned up.
No, it does look a lot better. It's still receding, but it's definitely better. I feel good. Hey,
that's God's plan. You can't. Right. Nobody can stop God's plan except for LeBron James.
That's what I'm saying. LeBron James at a couple million dollars. Thank you, Tim, for the five. How much panic will the shoe be in if on the first Notre Dame drive comes out and runs the ball right down the field and scores?
Buckeye Nation will lose their shit if Notre Dame comes out and just marches down the field running the ball down Ohio State's throat. I mean, they will lose their shit.
Yeah, that'll be all bad. They might fire Jim Knowles before halftime.
Right.
Just fucking with you. Do you think CJ will run more design plays, quarterback runs?
I doubt there's a single design quarterback run. I'm hopeful that he scrambles when it's necessary. I don't believe CJ Stroud should have a designed run in the game plan. Maybe a quarterback draw for third and really long, but still, like, why risk it? You have the best quarterback in the country. But when a defense drops eight, plays two man underneath, they're just coverage everywhere, and he sees running lanes, he has to take off these teams. And here's why, Chris. Two man is a defense, right? Where you have five guys underneath, they cover all five eligible receivers with two safeties over the top helping. That means that they, by design, fundamentally are trying to get beat over the top. So now any corner routes or go routes, they have a safety sitting there for help. That kid's double covered. And any routes coming back to the quarterback or in or out breaking routes, they are underneath those routes by design, right? That is probably the hardest coverage to throw against, because everyone's essentially double covered and the only throws are over the top throws, and you have to avoid safeties with those throws. The problem with that defense is if the quarterback takes off, everyone's back is to him. They're facing the wrong direction. You can get chunks of yards when teams play two man, and CJ has to identify that and has to take the fuck off. That's the only way you stop people from playing two man, is you have to run the quarterback and scramble. So if he doesn't do it, he's hurting the offense. If he does, watch out. He'll be the most dynamic player in college football.
Can't argue with that. I think this was about Tim Beck. He was also the OC for Herman in 2020 and was garbage.
That is absolutely about Tim Beck. I agree.
Tim Beck.
I love Tim Beck, and I don't think he's a bad coach, but he hasn't had a good track record of calling an offense.
He's at NC State now. He might fuck around and win the ACC.
Right. Well, like I said, coaches can improve. Like that, right, he's right. Smart. He's a great dude. He works his ass off. Like, he might have just really developed as a play caller.
Mm-hmm. No, you live and learn. I develop as a Madden play caller each and every year. Thank you, Rod, for the five, our guy. Harbaugh said the decision on who the quarterback will be is biblical. Is biblical? When are we going to acknowledge that that man suffers from CTE?
He has to. Because, see, he has sound bites that rival Mike Leach. The problem is Mike Leach is just super intelligent, and his sound bites are you know, actually well-based and well-thought-out, probably random as shit when he talks about which mascot would win in a fight. But the media also throws those softballs up to him to hit out of the park. Mm-hmm. Jim Harbaugh has some takes like, what? You just, a Bible verse is going to tell you who the quarterback is? No one like provoked him to say that. That came out. That means that he really has that thought in his mind.
Yeah, it's definitely real odd, man. Sums up a buddy for sure. Thanks to our guy T. Spivvy for the five. Will the O-line run the ball better this year? New coach, yada, yada.
Yeah. I mean, I think just unintentionally, just naturally, the offensive line, now you have your two tackles that are tackles playing, right? Should be two first-rounders, Paris Johnson Jr. and DeJuan Jones. Then you have an interior core that is going to be, at least they're in the right position, right? So you have, the offensive line is going to be better just by that. They also have a better football coach coaching and developing them. He's better with fundamentals. He has more energy. He coaches them harder. My feedback that I've gotten from the offensive line players is they are in love with the way he coaches because they feel like they're getting better and he's developing them. And it's high energy. He relates to them. So just for that simple fact, it's going to be better. Add into the fact that Travion Henderson and Mayan Williams are going to be better than they were last year.
Facts, big facts. Thank you to our guy, Stormin Norman. They won't run CJ. They never let Fields run. What if CJ had that Kyler Murray instinct? Dude had 4,000 passing yards and 1,000 rushing yards with 60-plus touchdowns in his Heisman year. I'd be good with 500 rushing yards from CJ. Yeah.
I mean, I agree. I agree.
I think 200, I'm good. 200 rushing yards, I'm good.
Yeah, and I think if you really look at it, right, CJ, there doesn't need to be any designed runs at all. Mm-hmm. He literally had minus 20 rushing yards last year. Minus 20. Just absurd. If you look at Justin Fields, he had 383 rushing yards, 81 attempts. He had 5 rushing touchdowns. So 500 yards is probably a little out there, but we can't have negative yards. That means he never scrambled for anything. Justin Fields ran for 5 touchdowns. If we can get 300 yards and 5 touchdowns on the ground from CJ Stroud, that is a massive win. But that, you don't even need that. He just has to do it every now and then just so defenses can't utilize these schemes that make it so damn hard to throw. Right. Case in point, the red zone. Red zone with brackets everywhere. Where do you want to throw? The safeties are low in the run game. They have an extra hat. The quarterback has to take off every now and then. That's why Justin Fields had 5 touchdowns. And that's what needs to happen. That's what he has to do.
Oh, Justin was just getting clarification. You're talking about Mike Yurcich getting fired from Tom Herman's staff.
No, gotcha. Oh, yeah, good call. Not Tim Beck. Tim Beck was also one of Tom Herman's coordinators. That was like, it was like Saban's rehab for coaches. It was like Urban fires a guy and Tom Herman swoops him up.
Says, let me get it. Let's run it. Okay, Zach, I got a couple of little quotes for Coach Speak, just keeping it nice and short. Going to start with Ryan Day. He said, there's an energy level to them, a confidence. Guys buzzing around, playing fast, playing violent, creating chaos out there. That's going to be a lot of fun to watch. That's Day on the defense, what he's seen in practice.
Yeah, I mean, I think that actually speaks for itself. There's not a lot of Coach Speak there. I think he's basically, the only Coach Speak to that is, that's what he's so pissed we didn't have for 2 years. Right. He just kind of got off his chest that this is what we lacked for 2 years that I see now, an energy to him, a confidence, guys buzzing around and playing fast, playing, creating chaos out there. It's going to be fun to watch. All those things were untrue for 2 years. And now he's excited because he feels that shift, that change. And so he's kind of getting off his chest what is really chapping his ass for the last 2 seasons.
Yeah, I've never heard him speak this positively about a defense. Even in 2019, he kind of like really tempered expectations. But I think 2 years of just kind of dysfunction and not competent defense, this is the most I've seen him given in a press conference.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's part of it is he actually is excited, and part of it is it's psychological. He's trying to motivate this defense. Like, look, I have your back. Publicly, I'm saying I'm excited. You guys are doing this. You're great. You're all this. He's trying to build up their confidence. I think in 2019, they had the confidence. He didn't need to build that up publicly. He needed to temper it down so they could just go out and be great. But this defense is, it's like you get a battered dog from the shelter. They've been beaten and abused publicly and on the field for 2 years, and they need built up so they can have confidence and be a fucking ass-kicking machine.
Facts, I get behind that. He was asked about where Knowles will coach the game. He says the Buckeyes will decide at the end of the week whether Jim Knowles will coach from the box or from the field in the season opener. I'm more just saying this because obviously that's pretty actually, we'll coach speak. What do you think he's
Well, Jim Knowles, if you watch his press conference, the one clip I did see, they asked him and they were like, oh, you don't have a plan yet? He goes, let me clarify. I do have a plan. I know where I'm going to be. I'm just not going to tell you.
Okay. Yeah.
They just don't want it out there. And I don't know why. Who gives a shit? The other team's offense is not going to do something differently because he's in the box or on the field. But it's just one of those things. He's like, I don't feel like telling you. Fuck you.
Just being a little bit of an asshole. It's funny because I think he let it slip up like right before training camp that he was going to be in on the field, because you and I talked real briefly about it. It's like, oh, it's more visible. Like you like coach on the field. Where would you want to see Jim Knowles?
I don't really care. It all comes down to the chemistry of the defensive staff. I think Tim Walton is an NFL guy. He knows scheme really well. Larry's going to be on the field. You have to be as a D-line coach. So if Tim Walton is as good as advertised, he can be in the box. I don't know Perry Eliano. I know he developed two good corners at Cincinnati, so he obviously can coach defensive backs. He can coach the fundamentals. I don't know if he's a scheme guy or not, and won't claim to. But I think in Tim Walton and Jim Knowles, you have two really good scheme guys. So it's a matter of, does Jim Knowles want to call the defense and feed the energy on the sideline because he trusts Tim Walton in the box? If he does, I like him on the field. If he wants to be able to control and see everything, I'm great with him being in the box. So really, it's not where Jim Knowles should be. It's how good is Tim Walton? Is he that good schematically that he can be the eyes in the box? If he can, then you're free to do it. You're free to leave Jim Knowles on the field. And I think that would do a lot, his square-jawed approach to coaching, to have him leading the defense on the front line.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little different. I like coaches being up in the, like DCs being up in the box, just to treat it like a chess game and be like two defensive calls ahead. But, you know, I'm not as smart as Schmoes. Schmoes went to freaking Harvard. But, you know, that's either here or there. And when he does talk about Tim Walton, he oftentimes talks about like Tim's football acumen. And it's interesting because whenever you hear NFL guys talk when they get to college, a lot of it is about, you know, all the time you guys had to spend recruiting, we have to spend studying film and getting better because we know that the NFL set up for everybody to go 8-8. And we know every other coach is sitting down, learning, because everyone's looking for that advantage, that break point to kind of create the trend rather than have to follow it. So all that recruiting time, those guys are just sitting there watching film. And that's something that Jeff Hafley went into detail.
There's no doubt. And that's times. Ryan Day is a great example of that. He and I talked about it at length when he first got back to Ohio State, because, you know, I've known Ryan since 2005. We were both on a college coaching journey and he made that leap with Chip Kelly. And I asked him, I said, did you love it? He said, I loved it, because 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, all I did was study football. He was like, I learned more football in those 2 years than I learned in my entire career before that, because that's all I did. I studied offensive football. I studied quarterback play and mechanics. Like, Ryan Day is the elite coach that he is today because he took a 2 year. It was almost like a fellowship, or it was like going to grad school. He studied the shit out of football for 2 years. Didn't have to worry about anything else. No recruiting, no, none of that. He just studied ball. Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing that Jeff Hafley echoed. Remember when Jeff Hafley got to Columbus and everyone was like very confused, but all he did was spend 3 years in San Fran, a very good defense, studying ball because he didn't have to recruit. And so to me, that is important. And to me, I think that's honestly, Zach, that's probably why we went and got Kerry Combs. Like, for that reason, like Ryan Day probably figured those 2 years in the NFL with Tennessee, football acumen, like he's had to have improved schematically. Just because that's kind of the nature of it. Zach, he was asked about the preparation and how close to being ready they are for the season opener. He kept it very, very square jaw. This is Jim Knowles. He said, we're ready. We're 100% ready to go.
There's no doubt. And I mean, you have to be at this point. You had all training camp. You had a mock game week last week, and now you're in actual game week. You've been shining this fucking game plan up for months. And now you're in the actual game week where you're going to tinker one thing here or there. You're going to just polish something up and hit one more deep ball and hit that blitz pattern one more time. And you're going to do that trick play one more time. And this is really where you just get a couple more reps to have a little bit more confidence when that play is called on Saturday. It's not a typical game week. This shit is ready to go. These kids are chomping at the bit, ready to play. And the good news, Chris, is in 3 days and 6.5 hours, it's kickoff time.
I'm so excited, Zach. Michael Thomas days away from kickoff. Jim Knowles said that the Buckeyes have been building a mindset of greatness. Knowles believes the Buckeyes are at a point where they care enough that they'll go through a wall for him and others on the coaching staff.
He's just trying to tell you they're aligned. The kids are bought in. The coaches are aligned. He feels like he did his job. They are ready to take on a season, and he has got accomplished what he wanted to.
That is so refreshing, Zach, because last year's defensive staff was not on the line. The year before that was not on the line. Those kids would not run through a brick wall for any of them, and I think that matters, especially for a championship run. Zach, I got nothing else left for today. Thank you so much, man. This was Zach hosted me in Columbus yesterday. Oh yeah,
I did. We went out and had dinner after he got his hair cut. So there's your slate for the weekend, though, Chris. Saturday at, what does that say? 3:30 Oregon, Georgia. 3:30 Cincinnati at Arkansas. 7:00 Utah at Florida. 7:30 Notre Dame at Ohio State. 7:30 Florida State at LSU. If you don't want to watch the game of the week, I guess you could watch that one or have two TVs on. And then don't forget about our extra added day of football. On Monday, we get to see Clemson and Chris's Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. So big time weekend of college football. We got two shows left. Also, reminder, we are going to have a post-game reaction show live on YouTube and a Sunday call-in show on Sunday. So if you're interested in having that phone number and in interacting with it, go check out our Patreon. I'll put these up one more time. Our general tier has a bunch of perks. Go to patreon.com/menacetosports and check out the different tiers we have, all with different perks and benefits. If you need a haircut in Dublin, go see our girl Alex. That link is in our bio. And what else? Get your Buckeye Square. Go to my bookie. I got them all, Chris. We're like a whore of a YouTube show. All the things we want you to do. But if nothing else, like this video, comment, share it with a friend. We appreciate you. We're coming back tomorrow with some more breakdowns. And then Friday, as always, Follow Friday, Super Chat Friday. Have a great show for you then. Appreciate everybody. Menace out.